and welcome to More Than a Movie, the weekly show about films and filmmaking here on Campus FM. My name's Andrew Bonello, and along with the guest I'll welcome onto the show very shortly, we'll take a journey into the magical world of movies to explore how films can be such a powerful reflection of real life's struggles and joys, making them so much more than just a movie. And we conclude this second season of our show with wacky comedy hybrids. Yes, whether we're delving into adventure, mystery, or romance, let's guffaw, chortle, snicker, and belly laugh at some of the most offbeat comedies to grace the big screen in recent decades. Coming up later, a journalist with a humdrum life gets some family news that could change everything.
In and out, burger, may I take your order, please?
Mr. Owen Fletcher, this is Amanda Ray Ross. I represented your Aunt Belle Fletcher.
Good old Aunt Belle. How the hell is she?
She's deceased, Mr. Fletcher.
Oh. Well, I guess she could be better.
We follow a very strange crossword puzzle author as she crosses the country for true love.
Here we get going. I'm gonna fall in love and register at Barnes & Noble, have a beautiful wedding, little tiny plastic bride and groom on top of a cake posing like this.
If you ever want to see any grandchildren, you're gonna have to burn those damn boots.
And we take a crash course on technique for the second oldest profession known to man, that of the used car salesman.
So Stan, you want to buy this Buick Centurion, huh? Good choice. Smart man, you got good taste. I'll tell you something, a lot of people have these days. Nice to see somebody finally walk on this lot who knows a good car when he sees one, I'll tell you. So, we read it up?
Yeah, well, actually, I was just looking.
Oh, hey, terrific.
But before we get to that, let me begin by introducing our guest this week. Before moving to Malta, Nicholas Jackman was a beat poet and voiceover artist in his native Ireland. Since arriving here in Malta in 2016, he's taken on various film and voice roles befitting his unique performance style. To share a little bit of that and discuss his work, he joins me in the studio today. Nicholas, welcome!
Nicholas here for the second time. I was here 6 years ago. We're doing an audio story for the landings and during World War II.
Oh, okay.
Not the Nasdaq. The Australian and New Zealand.
Okay.
Yeah, it was.
Well, welcome back in that case. So, Nicholas, let's start here. Tell me a bit about how your love for film and performing was born.
It would start with Michael Jackson at 4.5 and winning the Wicklow Disco Dancing Competition. And it would end with me making no money from dancing. So,
okay, but wait, let's drill into that. You were performing a Michael Jackson song in this?
No, he taught me. So I'd jump around, and next thing I'm in this event where there's 300 kids bopping around the place, and
nice.
All of a sudden I'm the best dancer at 4.
Wow!
I thought my career was set, but as I would continue, my dancing got more and more comedic, as in, you know, you try to pull off moves, the body gets sore and achy, and yeah, messed off. I'm good at washing the floor with my bottom.
So that's a sort of an early sort of trend in your childhood performance
style.
Yeah,
it would come on, and you know, this whole show off capacity. And okay. You go through some years, you're an introvert, then you pretend to be an extrovert. Next thing, you do things like this in order to try to push yourself outside your comfort zone. Mm-hmm. You stand up in front of people. You do the school music. You fall on your face in front of every kid in the school. They laugh at you. It makes you stronger. And then eventually you end up in a place like Malta where you're very unusual looking. And for some reason, the people are willing to sometimes pay you to act.
Well, which is the greatest pleasure of all, I suppose, isn't it, really?
It is a joy, you know, fighting for every fiver is, I much prefer those fivers than, like, salary fivers, you know, and the acting money always comes in just really useful just when you need it.
Absolutely. So, do you remember the first film you ever saw in the cinema, or the first play, perhaps, in a theatre that really, really struck you?
We're looking back that old. You're saying I'm from a time pre-screen,
just like myself. Well, not quite, but
spray hair belies. I'm still sub 40. And first wise, you know, obviously, Back to the Future was the big one. Who Framed Roger Rabbit? They were the big releases in the back.
So, sort of comedy, fantasy, sci-fi was.
But, you know, it'd be very rare that a movie would come to Ireland back then, really. I don't know what the logistics were.
Was there a big
when they did come, they were the talk of the foot. You know, you'd be at the football field, and all the parents would be talking about there's a new movie. It was a bigger deal back then,
right?
I think now media is a billion times more accessible.
It's all ubiquitous now. Was there a big theatre scene growing up in Ireland?
Every town would have had, you know, even two competing cinemas, which then became later on, you know, you'd have the multiplex in the larger town edging on the side of the city, but everything else would close down.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you had mentioned in the run-up that you did some Shakespeare back in Ireland. You were in Macbeth. Uh-huh. Tell us about that.
I like to stick it when I say Shakespearean trained, you know, yes, I did one Shakespearean play and the person trained me.
Okay.
So it helps in order to try to get that extra fiver on your VO bill, you know.
Adding it to your resume, yeah. And which character did you play in the?
I was Macbeth. I was King Duncan.
Okay.
As nice. I liked dying. It means you need to remember less lines.
You just get to lie there for a while.
I've gotten killed off several times. You know, obviously we've got other films there. I think that are on your list that I was in, like Mystery of the Britannic. Of course, I died in Mystery of the Britannic.
Right.
In real life, I tend to be beaten within an inch of my life, but rarely I've yet to die.
Not dead yet.
Yeah. I love it. And in music videos and things, because I'm not a small guy, sometimes I get typecast as this fighter, as this murderer, and I've done my fair share of murdering and fighting on screen.
On screen, just to be clear to our listeners.
I haven't done any murdering. There's been a couple of deaths which can be linked to me, but it's only accidental.
Nicholas, let's move on.
I already told everything to the state prosecutor on Thursday.
Okay. We're not going to try and incriminate you here on the radio. So you've done theatre, you've done a lot of voice work, radio work, and film. Tell me a bit about which you prefer. Obviously, there are big differences between all those performance media. Which one do you find yourself falling into most naturally?
The easiest. It's, you know, from a business point of view, although voiceover makes sense financially.
Okay. It pays better.
If you're looking at it, because you know there the jobs are rare, but if you can. You know, you get one, you get a fair rate for it. If you got two and you book in the studio or this, all of a sudden becomes far more profitable than any other type of work in some ways, you know. I'm not professionally trained in anything, but, you know, if a gig pays 50 quid
mm-hmm.
and it takes 30 seconds.
Right, you're saying time-wise it pays relatively well.
Paper time, it's, you know, it's better than barrister stuff. You know, you just need a quantity of low-quality work.
If you have enough of it, right.
If you have enough of it, yes.
Very interesting. So you've done some short film work here in Malta. One of them was a short horror film,
Fabrizio Benic,
directed a film called Obscure, and you were the main lead in that.
I think it's because, you know, I think these youngsters, when they, you know, Fabrizio, you know, I think he's... He really ahead of his time. He was 19 at the time, and what he could pull off, and now another 6 or 7 years under his belt, you know, mm-hmm. just constantly working and creating and directing and shooting and managing teams and producing. But kids, they always write their scripts, and they look at it like the characters are 22 years of age, because for them, 22 is... You know, it's an old man.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But then when they see this balding, you know, mid-30s guy come in, and he's maybe more confident than they were used to. I think I got the role because I remember going in there, and you know, it was because I wasn't an experienced actor at the time. But I was confident in front of these kids, and it really it's helped me. And based upon Obscure, you know, every role leads to another role.
Yes. And I remember your role in that film. You are, I forget the exact story, but you're a very sort of haunted, sort of single man living alone in this rather sort of spooky house. But, you know.
I should have been single. I had one of the most beautiful girlfriends on the island, and I always, in my movies, I always have girls that are way out of my league. It was Marisha Perez. She was also, she was Queen Isabella in Assassin's Creed. She's another local actress.
Well, hopefully your film roles will translate into real life soon, right?
Fake girlfriends, yeah.
That's great. But it was quite an interesting role because you don't say very much. You know, there's a lot of facial acting and you're sort of, it's a psychological performance. So it was an interesting piece, wasn't it?
I was winging it.
That's very honest.
I was winging it. I tried to go for what you feel. You shut up. You're scared. But, you know, when you're on set for 12, 13, 14, 15 hours, it becomes this nice star. The thing that I'm best at, you know, quite often in movies, part of my role involves sleeping.
Okay.
And I always fall asleep, naturally. I'm really good at it.
Right, so you're a convincing sleep actor.
Convincing sleep actor.
Goodness. Very interesting. Okay, well, there was also Mix Up in the Mediterranean. We've mentioned it a number of times in previous episodes, which was a Hallmark movie shot at the end of 2020. I think you had a role...
Nice. I was Chef Patrick O'Shea, you know, big... brutish guy, you know, according to the producer, you know, he does as well in the ring as he does at the oven.
Right, because as I remember, the rough plot is that the film centers around a cooking competition, so you were one of the competitors sort of making up this panel.
Making the semis as me and my friend, a Japanese, he was playing Japanese, he's from the Philippines.
Right.
But I met him last day. He's a real chef in town, but we didn't make the finals. These fakes got it.
These fraudsters in the story.
I'm not a bad cook. I'm pretty sure that these celebs who were playing those two roles, I don't think they're that good at cooking at all.
Well, we'll have to reserve judgment, won't we?
The food wasn't real at the competition. It wasn't real food.
Right. All for story. Well, interesting. Nicholas, we're going to talk a bit more about some of your other roles in a little bit, but today's theme for our episode is wacky comedy hybrids. And I wanted to ask, do you have a favourite comedy movie that you're particularly fond of and would like to recommend to our listeners?
To recommend? If you want to be a kid again, you watch Dumb and Dumber. You want to trace back to, I guess, something that simple, something that was very pure, and it reminds me of days before I knew about all of the tortures of the world.
Let's have a quick listen to a clip from Dumb and Dumber.
Excuse me, could you tell me how to get to the medical school?
You go straight ahead, and you make the left over the bridge.
That's a lovely accent you have. New Jersey?
Austria.
Austria? Well, then... Good day, mate. Let's put another shrimp on the barbie.
Hey, want to hear the most annoying sound in the world?
Guys! Guys! Guys!
So, from 1994 then, this is the Farrelly Brothers comedy Dumb and Dumber, starring, of course, Jim Carrey and Jeff Daniels. So, Nicholas, what did you love about it?
I didn't like the wait for the sequel.
Okay.
I was hanging. I wanted more, so you watch it 1, 2, 3 times. Just laughing so hard. I remember there being one scene where, you know, where there was a young blind boy who, was holding his bird with its head sellotaped back on, you know, thought it was alive, you know. You know,
yes, some jokes of sort of questionable taste, one would say, but still.
I don't know if I'd laugh at them then. Maybe I'm here and I'm trying to talk through a time warp to, like, my 10-year-old self or 12-year-old self, so I mean, watch it a 6th and a 7th time, but...
And it's interesting because, I mean, it's a while since I saw the film, but obviously Jim Carrey and Jeff Daniels, they're both playing people who are sort of really a little bit under the level of general intelligence. How would a performance like that get pieced together? Is that all script? Or do you think they would have done a lot of development in sort of spending time together prior to rehearsing? Or, like, how do you act dumb on screen?
Well, you know Jim Carrey. I think he uses that method acting as well.
Okay.
Yes. So he probably just smacked his head against glass wall many times, you know, to kind of dumb it down. I guess they, him and Jeff just bounced off each other really well. The, there was an awesome chemistry.
Yes.
It was still there 20 years later when it came out with a sequel, but it was too late.
Right.
You know, my humor had moved on, I think.
Yes, it's certainly, for listeners, certainly very much of the juvenile humor variety, but great fun. And I love that clip in the trailer because there's a guy sitting in the van with them and they're just torturing this guy with their sort of their idiocy, really. Brilliant. Okay, well, let's move back to your own work, Nicholas, here. So are you working on anything at the moment? Do you have anything coming up?
At the weekend, I did for H Hotel, for Hugo's, we did the VO for License the Thrill. This is a crack and a really well-produced the Kevin Audi ad that'll be hitting the screen soon.
This is for a commercial?
For a commercial, yeah.
Okay.
In terms of have I any bookings? I was supposed to do something today, but I said there's a radio. My time didn't add up.
You blew it off for our radio show.
I did. I
fantastic.
Wanted to come back to you, man. I really hope in one day to, you know, be on the airwaves again.
That's good.
Multiple.
Well, thank you so much for making time to join us today. Another film I wanted to mention, we had a previous guest on the show, Hristo Hristovsky, an independent short filmmaker here in Malta, and he's working on an upcoming short film, Beautiful Lie. I believe you had a role in that
one? Yeah, as far as I understand, it's coming off the production line the next couple of days. I'm looking forward to seeing. And it was a small role. It was myself. I love working with Steve, yeah? We first worked together like 6 years ago, and sometimes you find yourself, you're trying to really up your game when you're in the same room as him.
This is Stephen Oliver, who was also on our show fairly recently.
He's not in my scenes.
I see.
I got to work with Michelle Kirk, who I also got to work with on the mix-up in The Med. They had to change the name because of, did you know why they had to change the name?
No.
The original movie title was Baked Alaska.
I remember, yes.
But then there was that Trump riot and one of the main protagonists' name was Baked Alaska.
Oh, is that right?
So they changed that. That'd be bad for marketing.
Goodness. So it was for sort of, because of it stories looked, in the political
that's what
climate.
Made sense to me when I saw Baked Alaska breaking down the door in the Capitol building and
right,
participating in the murder of that police officer.
Gosh.
It wouldn't be good to have the same name, really.
That's an interesting piece of trivia. I did not know that. So fascinating, yes. And your role in Beautiful Lie, I mean, can you tell us a little about it?
I'm a doctor. I'm very lucky that I don't have to put on voices in general during my acting, so I'm an Irish doctor, strangely enough, you know. I think it was a coincidence that I'm on the island and I got the part of the Irish chef, you know. It seems to be I'm only really getting these things because I don't either. Because, you know, if you're having 10 nationalities, it's weird, you know, even though we're only an island of 3.9 million people, I think it's one of those nationalities that might be in the spectrum, you know, that just Irish.
It's so recognizable.
It's there, and it's also, it's kind of non-contentious, because no one really hates us. We haven't done any real harm to anyone, you know. We haven't, you know, we haven't got our colonies. There's one island over in the Caribbean where apparently some Irish guys had got shipwrecked with the prior slaves, and they all have Irish accents.
Blimey.
But that's the closest we ever came to real colonization. There's a few too many of us on Malta at the moment. We're kind of taking over. I think it's also there's as many of us as there is the Swedish, you know.
So a bustling Irish community here.
It is. I love it here, yeah.
But out of curiosity, in terms of your performance range, do you do other accents? I mean, can you neutralize? Can you do British?
I mean, before I started into the TV acting, I was doing audiobooks for a living. So in the audiobooks, I'd have to do a lot of voices. You know, and I was always too cheap. And I always offered too much, you know. So, you know, in some of these novels, you're supposed to do two voices. Okay. You know, that's the basic offer from an audiobook creator is two different
voices. So you have to voice two different mains of characters.
Two different styles of voices, you know.
Okay.
But next thing, for my few hundred euro for the audiobook, I'd be 13 different characters, you know, trying to remember how you move. As I say, I don't know. I'm well practiced. I'm not trained.
Okay.
But I started on as a beat poet back at you know, obviously I was writing poetry from babies' ages. But we were on the stages of the underground scene in Ireland. I mean, they did it over across in Asia. Beat poet stages for a decade more before it kind of even took to going abroad, you know?
So it sounds like you've done quite a big range of performance styles then. In terms of roles, what would your ideal role be if you had a choice? Would you want to be, for example, a detective? Do you see yourself as the funny guy or the straight guy in a duo?
It's funny you say that. You know, I love anything with a bit of meat on it. There was a lovely role. Myself and Mike West were having a good laugh over it there the other day because we were. He was convinced that he had got the role. I was convinced that I had got the role, and neither of us got the role. you get it, and they tell you it was a really meaty role. It was an Irish character again, and he had basically been helping save prisoners of war from the Nazis. You know, real historic character, Maltese, big Maltese production. That I would have liked.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin Naudy has promised me I can be a detective. He's going to shoot something soon. And that, yeah, I think the detective thing, I start going to the gym this week. I think there's more chance, more acting roles if I do look like a beast. Pretty much, you know.
You want to beef up a bit.
There's a thing. What's his name? The Bond roles to go to. It's not Pierce Brosnan's anymore. It's either beefy or boozy.
Danny Craig thing. Yeah. But so things like more serious roles, detectives or agents.
Yeah, totally.
You'd be into that.
I'd like to go into it. I was just looking back to yesterday. It's something I did for Mark De Bono. It's almost, I think, 2019 it came out. It came out on Malta. But it just came, he released it on YouTube yesterday, and I was just looking through it. Dark comedy. And I'm looking back, and that was, I think, some of my best work. Okay. I was very happy with that It just one episode, really controversial. I had to kind of step outside of this comfort zone because I'm a big gay man. But I'm not just any kind of big gay man. Right. I'm a love rat. And I'm a particularly attractive, apparently, or very good at getting these men, you know.
Interesting.
But it was written by a Maltese writer who just happened to write an Irish. He wanted an Irish gay character. You know, I'm sorry, I can't remember his name at the minute. Sorry. But I remember him talking to me, and he just assumed that he kind of, okay, you're on Malta, it's an island, you know. He's here like, cool, okay, I've got an Irish actor. I mean, that should be okay. But he just assumed I was a raving homosexual as well.
Gosh.
But then, I
but you pulled it off.
I did. I took my lovely hot massage. I kissed my man.
Quite an intimate scene, wasn't it? Yeah.
It was. But you just pretend it's, you know, if you're kind of acting and visualizing.
Sure.
But you're looking at someone, it's hard, you know, and then you wonder, If I am kissing this girl who I love, but then I look at my eyes when I'm in the Alf Metadu, and my eyes are exactly the same as I know they are if I'm kissing a girl, you know?
So it's sort of...
So am I acting in real life, right, or in... Was it just...
Insight into the acting process here. Very quickly, Nicholas, one final question. If you had the chance to make any feature you want, whether you were directing it or writing it, producing, what kind of a film do you think you'd want to make?
I want to create a series. Sometimes I'm very serious, and sometimes I'm really, really controlled, and for years I'm very serious, and sometimes I'm a little... I tried to put the pieces together in order to create Blockchain Island.
Okay.
Dark comedy series,
like a
Black Mirror, perhaps, okay, or something.
So sort of sci-fi dystopian,
exactly as it is. You know, obviously push on the blockchain Malta.
So somehow playing on this sort of cryptocurrency,
exactly,
sort of technology.
This whole new futuristic world, all the resulting comedy with a lot of action and intrigue and thrills. Because I don't know if any genre itself can stand by itself anymore, because
Indeed.
we need See, it's just about a matter of finding those combination of mixes of genres.
Right. I mean, that's certainly something we've talked about on many episodes, is that it's quite rare these days to come across a pure comedy or pure sci-fi. You know, we certainly have talked about a lot of films that are very much hybrids, including several of the films in today's comedy episode. Nicholas, we're out of time. This was really interesting. Thank you very much for coming on the show. We definitely wish you the best of luck with all your various voice and film roles, and we hope we'll be seeing much more of you on the big screen soon.
Cool. I hope to talk to you on the airwaves soon, too.
Thanks a lot, Nicholas, and have a great one. Now then, what about comedies that were shot here in Malta? Well, here's one for you.
History shall record that General Napoleon Bonaparte died in exile on the island of St. Helena on the 5th of May, 1821.
No, that's not how it ended. Let me tell you what really happened.
6 years of gazing at these dreary walls.
Yes, well, the wait is soon ended. By midnight, our man will be here in your place.
And I shall be on my way to France.
From 2001, this is Alan Taylor's comedy romance, The Emperor's New Clothes, starring Ian Holm and Danish actress Iben Yale. The film seems to have been shot in various locations in Italy, but also partially here in Malta. Well, I must say from the trailer, the comedy here looks to be rather more subtle than in some of the films we'll chuckle to later on. But as you heard in that trailer, during Napoleon's exile on St. Helena, loyalists hire a lookalike to swap places with the deposed emperor. The plan is that the real Napoleon will sneak back into Paris in order to retake the throne. As you might guess, though, things don't quite go according to plan.
It seems that I must impose a little longer.
I'll soon lose the house, do you understand? I have no money and certainly no bed for you.
My deceit, settle down. Your efforts have been courageous, but confused and futile. It is now time to prepare a rigorous plan of action. Remember, we conquer or perish.
This man is not what he seems.
Well, it's now time to venture beyond the shores of our hallowed Isles of Malta as we discover some truly wacky comedy hybrids. Let's begin with a study of American commerce at its very worst, from way back at the start of that epic decade that was the 1980s.
You make them like this anymore. Why don't you go ahead and sit inside? Go ahead. This new upholstery, only 27,000 miles, and we just gave the engine a complete overhaul yesterday. Go ahead, kick her over. Isn't that the quietest engine you've ever heard in your life?
Used cars. Rolling off the blocks this summer into a theater near you.
Yes, from 1980, this is Used Cars, directed by one of Hollywood's masters of genre cinema, Robert Zemeckis. Of course, we discussed this director in our first ever episode of More Than a Movie for his superb 1997 sci-fi drama, Contact. Used Cars hails from the wonderful imagination of Bob Gale, who co-wrote the script with Zemeckis. True Hollywood aficionados will recognize these two names. They headed the team that wrote and produced Back to the Future, probably one of the best comedy hybrid movies ever made. Staying in gear with Used Cars, though, the poster for this film features an extreme close-up of a great big lemon. That should give you a clear idea of the bitter tone of the piece. It focuses entirely on that timeless American trope, the used car salesman, using, as he does, any means at his disposal to tempt prospective buyers off of his competitor's lot and onto his own.
Hi there! How you doing? Say, this your $10? You know, I saw it floating underneath the car, I picked it up. Here you are, Mr. What's your name?
Stanley Dowalski.
Polish, eh? What a coincidence. Rudy Polanski, how are you? Hey, I like that watch, Stan. Got great shoes, love them.
Thanks.
So, Stan, you want to buy this Buick Centurion, huh? Good choice. Smart man, you got good taste. I'll tell you something a lot of people have these days. Nice to see somebody finally walk on this lot who knows a good car when he sees one, I'll tell you. So, we read it up?
Yeah, well, actually, I was just looking.
Oh, hey, terrific. Terrific. That's what we're here for, Stan. Here you can look, browse, peek, touch, feel, taste, smell, do anything you want, take all the time you want. Nobody's going to pressure anybody around here, Stan.
You know something else, Dan? I really think you ought to buy this Buick.
Mm-hmm. Well, you might have recognized that voice. Kurt Russell is one of Hollywood's most seasoned genre actors. In 1982, just 2 years after Used Cars, he starred in probably one of the greatest genre flicks ever made. That was John Carpenter's creepy Lovecraftian suspense horror, The Thing. But starring here in Used Cars, Russell shows his amazing versatility as a performer, taking on a delectably sleazy comic leading role with real gusto. But he's not the only dodgy dealer on the forecourt. Nay, for his teammates are similarly roguish in their sales technique.
So, Al, I think the least we can do is take the car for a test drive, huh? Toby wants to go for a test drive, don't you, Toby? Test drive with Toby, how about it, Al? All right. Okay, everybody in the car!
Well, where to start with this film? The movie is, put quite simply, utter madness. It's plotted loosely around a war for car dealership supremacy between the two Fuchs brothers. They dwell at opposite ends of both the boulevard and the personality spectrum. The two brothers are played with relish by Jack Warden, who, by the way, also starred in a film from a recent episode of our show. That movie was 1978's Death on the Nile. The plot's hardly the point here, though. Used Cars is a rip-roaring comedy caper of ever-escalating wackadoodle schemes, plots, machinations, and antics of the utterly balmy yet hilarious variety. The whole thing is brilliantly inventive and, as you might guess, terrifically staged and directed by Zemeckis and his team, who were already showing great technical professionalism, even at this relatively early stage.
Trust me, it's got everything this picture has. Color, sound, people moving around, the works. It's a comedy with a lot of options. You want spectacle? We got spectacle. You want love interest? We got it. There goes another satisfied customer now. And that's what I call a bargain.
Promise me you'll keep my mercenary brother from getting his hands on this lot.
If I could buy him out, do you think I'd go to all the trouble to try to have him put away?
I kid you not, you won't even believe half of what you'll see in this film. There's strong language and a couple of very raunchy scenes as these dueling merchants resort to ever more ludicrous publicity stunts, transmitted on cable TV through whatever pirated means their nerdy underground engineering crew can cobble and wire together. It all just gets wackier and wackier. Such as here, when the broadcast of a national television address by President Jimmy Carter is hijacked and interrupted.
What is the solution?
You want the solution to inflation? Hi, friends. Marshall Lucky here for New Deal Used Cars, where we're battling inflation not only by fighting high prices,
not only by murdering high prices, but by blowing the living out of high prices. Yes, sir, you heard me right. Now, here's an example. 1973 Cadillac Coupe de Ville for $62.99. That price is too high.
The fevered imagination of writer Bob Gale is a joy to behold. Indeed, he was behind several rather lesser-known films of this era. Those included Tales from the Crypt, Bordello of Blood, a hilariously camp horror comedy starring Dennis Miller. That was a production, though, which had a very troubled road to fruition. Check out the documentary Tainted Blood about the making of Bordello of Blood, if you can find it up on YouTube. Full of interviews, it is a fascinating insight into just how complex and troubled a production shoot can actually be. And in 2002, Bob Gale directed Interstate 60, Tales from the Road, a charming fantasy comedy adventure starring James Marsden and an early role from veteran actor Gary Oldman. Here in Used Cars, then, the final act builds to a climax so ludicrous and far-fetched that it simply has to be seen to be believed. Do yourself a favor, then, and polish up this hidden gem of 80s comedy. After all, what could possibly go wrong?
Hey, Stan, trust me, huh?
Happy motoring, Stan!
Trust me.
Trust me.
Trust me?
Trust me. Trust me.
Hey, come on, trust me!
Well, moving on now, let's begin with the theme from our next movie. This music is composed by Harold Faltermeyer. From 1989, this is Michael Ritchie's comedy mystery Fletch Lives, starring Saturday Night Live legend and one of my favorite comedians ever, Chevy Chase. Following on from the original 1985 movie Fletch, this sequel is by far my preferred choice of the two. I won't lie though, the comedy isn't always sophisticated, nor that politically correct. Chase plays investigative journalist Irwin Fletcher, who, arriving at his press office desk one morning, gets an intriguing piece of personal news.
In an out burger, may I take your order, please?
Mr. Irwin Fletcher, this is Amanda Ray Ross. I represented your Aunt Belle Fletcher.
Good old Aunt Belle. How the hell is she?
She's deceased, Mr. Fletcher.
Oh, well, I guess she could be better.
You're a hard man to find.
I was touring with the Stones. What can I do for you?
Didn't you get my message?
No.
I'm the executor of your aunt's will, and as such, I can inform you, you are the major beneficiary of your aunt's estate, Belle Isle.
Fletcher's newfound inherited wealth causes him to immediately resign his post, much to his amusing editor's chagrin. Fletch heads down into America's deep south. It's not long, though, before he tussles with the local hickster law officers and has to start making new friends in jail.
Take your pants off.
I don't even know your name.
Bend over.
Ben, nice to meet you. Victor Hugo. You wouldn't happen to have a middle name, would you? Everybody else around here is used to. What are you in for, Ben?
Molesting a dead horse.
Oh, there's no crime in that. You're right as an American. I'm trying to cut down myself.
Yikes. Well, the movie loosely follows the form of a procedural detective mystery. Investigative journalist Fletcher follows in the heady footsteps of some famous progenitors, even Sherlock Holmes, if you will. Because yes, Fletch has a propensity for donning increasingly ridiculous costumes and disguises in his search for the truth about the shady goings-on down south. Here, he's caught red-handed by a not-so-wily local policeman while trespassing in someone's home.
Thank you very much. Couldn't find that light switch myself.
What the hell are you doing here? It's a restricted area. Didn't you see the sign?
Sign? Signs? That's all I see is signs. Look at this. Stressed out dormants on the windows, walls that are deplaning to an alarming degree.
Deplaning?
This house is obviously infested with reticularis Mario Cuomo's.
Well, what's that?
What's what?
Well,
reticularis. See, you can't even say it yourself.
They are deadly African microscopic termites. They can eat 100 times their weight in 5 minutes. Much like yourself, from the look of things, I'd say, oh, this place is about ready to collapse.
Yes, we're led on a merry chase through high southern society and low, as our shape-shifting sleuth cons his way through the corridors of power. Listen to how he commandeers the video security desk at a local TV studio.
Bobby Ralph? Peter Lemongello, your house is on fire.
What?
They told me to tell you your house is on fire. I'll take over.
God bless you!
And God bless you for believing me.
Another of the main characters in the story is played by the legendary actor R. Lee Ermey, who film buffs will recall from his chilling turn as the ill-fated drill sergeant in Stanley Kubrick's 1987 war drama Full Metal Jacket. Here in Fletch Lives, Ermey takes on the role of Jimmy Lee Farnsworth, an evangelical TV host and personality with somewhat dubious motives.
Your Aunt Belle recently passed away, didn't she, son?
Yes, she did. Yeah.
Are you still grieving in your heart, son?
Absolutely.
And even her generous gift to you of the ancestral home, the beautiful Belle Isle, has not eased the grief, pain, and suffering in your heart now, has it?
Not a hell of a lot, no.
Erwin, admit that you are a sinner.
Well, I've sinned. Didn't take any Polaroids or anything, but I've sinned, yeah.
The Lord forgives you!
Thank you very much. Thank you.
True to form, though, it's not long before Fletch decides to take to the stage himself, using the more than willing, God-fearing, and full-pocketed TV church congregation to his own ends.
Oh, Jim Bob, welcome. God bless you. Jim Bob. How long have you had these headaches?
About 5-10 minutes.
God help him! And how do you feel now?
Well, it's a throbbing.
Well, God bless you. A throbbing headache comes right up through your heels, up through the hip bone, the knee bone, up the spine, up through your back, through your head, like Satan was belching through his head.
Exactly.
Do you believe?
I believe.
He believes. Hallelujah. Amen. God bless. Amen. Hallelujah.
Well, look, this is a mystery in theory, but really, it's just a rip-roaring good romp of late 80s comedy antics of, frankly, the most amusing kind. Chevy Chase's performance, despite his towering physicality, has a curiously deadpan quality. Indeed, he very much plays the straight man to the comedy foil that is himself, only spreading his true comedic wings when donning those aforementioned absurd disguises. There's a strong sense of place and a good supporting cast, including Hal Holbrook, Julianne Felix, and Cleven Little, who you'll recognize from Mel Brooks' classic 1974 comedy, Blazing Saddles. This all contributes to a delightful slice of low-key, late 20th century comedy. At one point, though, the movie goes full-on Mary Poppins, with 2D cell animation overlays of cartoon animals in a huge musical number with a dancing cast of hundreds. Let's have a listen to that scene, then, from the highly recommended comedy, Fletch Lives.
The field hands would like to dance for you.
Dance for me? Well, dance for them.
Yes, sir. Zippity-doo-dah, zippity-ay. My, oh my, what a wonderful day.
Oh, plenty of sunshine. Mm-hmm. Hear me.
You bet. Mr. Bluebird's on my shoulder. Ain't it the truth? Is actual. Everything is satisfactual. Zip-a-dee-doo-dah, zip-a-dee-doo.
Next up today, we dive deep into genre territory.
July 31st, 1750. A hurricane sinks the greatest treasure fleet in history. 40 chests of jewelry and gold crowns for the Queen of Spain.
A 300-year-old mystery.
Do you have any idea what this is?
This is what I've been looking for 8 years.
An unlikely partnership.
You and this woman have been divorced for the last 60 seconds.
From 2008, this is Andy Tennant's comedy adventure Fool's Gold, starring, yes you guessed it, Matthew McConaughey and Kate Hudson. They play an unhappy former couple who stumble upon a potential new spark in their marriage in the form of a promised stash of lost treasure.
Do you have any idea how humiliating it is to get divorced by yourself?
Maybe he had car trouble.
Car trouble? He'd have to own a car. I'm going back to Chicago. I'm going to get my PhD and I'm going to spend the rest of my life writing books.
Where are you going to get the tuition money?
By selling my boat, which belongs to me.
Oh, come on, Tess, you're not going to hit me.
Finn is a genius at exactly three things. Treasure salving, finding money for treasure salving, and one other thing.
What other thing?
Want to talk about it.
Well, beautiful beachside location photography features throughout this little gem of a comedy. There are underwater diving scenes aplenty, and they're spectacularly well shot, including in the fun opening sequence. The tropey sound of the setup might suggest a dry movie, haha, but the story here is actually quite charming, albeit a rather light-hearted one. The broken couple soon realizes they'll need to recruit some help with very deep pockets for the treasure hunt, which opens up a lovely little ensemble of comedic characters.
If we don't go after that treasure, it's going to haunt us the rest of our lives, and you know it.
You really think I'd lie about this?
Why not? You're a liar. I mean, this is such an inappropriate time to dwell on that.
So tell us about the treasure.
It's $500 million worth of diamonds, rubies, and emeralds the size of your fist.
Anyone going to find that treasure, it's going to be me.
That's the real delight of this film. The cast includes strong support from Donald Sutherland as the aforementioned millionaire, Ray Winston, comic actor Kevin Hart, even train spotter Ewan Bremner joins the fray as an amusing Ukrainian dive hand. And Alexis Dzina as the aging millionaire's young daughter gives a charming turn as the shopaholic with an inferiority complex turned treasure hunter.
Why does everyone I know think I'm hot? Except the ones on this boat.
We think you're hot.
Are you kidding me?
I know I do.
Emma, I need your help.
No time to explain.
What do you want? Some expert advice on how to be stupid?
Look, see how dumb they are?
Yeah?
They can't help it. You can. The end. Let's go.
This is a pretty big production. It's full of action and impressive stunt work, both at sea and on land and in the air. There's so much to enjoy in this golden-hearted adventure.
You're sitting on top of a huge secret that nobody knew existed.
Don't even think about it.
What?
You know what? Oh.
Are you shot?
No, are you shot?
Not yet, stop!
When was the last time you had this thing shopping?
1750.
Well, Kate Hudson is the daughter of Oscar-winning actress Goldie Hawn, and Hudson's such a natural, watchable protagonist in any of her lead roles. Here, she's head-shakingly bitter as the much-maligned ex-spouse to McConaughey's ridiculous, board-short-toting, bronze-muscled California surfer dude with the winning smile. It has to be said, both leads display impressive natural comedic talent here, along with more than a hint of physical chemistry. Needless to say, as the team nears their buried booty, the iced-over romance between our two leads begins to thaw.
Don't even think about it.
What?
Don't want me, you know what.
It's weird, right?
What?
This. All this together.
It's complex, but not in a good way.
Well, can I just say, I really wish we were still married.
No.
It's adventure comedy on the high seas that borrows from the best of the classic pirate ship novels, Treasure Island and Moonfleet. I'm looking at you, kids. So if you're in the mood for such nautical fare, with a dash of sweet romance to boot, then X definitely marks the spot for Fool's Gold.
PlayStation!
Oh.
We found something. I mean, we found something.
What if it's a body?
I thought he was a midget. A very cheap relative.
What if it's a head?
Do you mind?
For our final film in this season of the show, then, well, every time I revisit this one, I'm sort of astonished that this movie ever got greenlit by a studio. Arguably, this is one that ought never to have seen the light of day.
Harry.
Yes?
Do you ever stop working long enough to, you know, like go out, go on a date?
Oh, well, I have a date this evening. Yeah, Steve. His mother probably thinks he's gay. So my parents are no doubt pimping me out to test his sexuality, thanks.
From 2009, this is Phil Traill's comedy romance, All About Steve. Sandra Bullock, in surely one of her oddest roles ever, plays a misfit crossword puzzle author whose life is a rather sorry catalogue of head-shaking clichés. This is such a brave turn by Bullock, who, lest we forget, has been a leading lady and romantic icon in Hollywood, and that since the late 80s right through to today, as she's still actively performing and, indeed, producing. A quite remarkable career. And at the outset of All About Steve, she's still living at home with her parents. I guess some listeners here in Malta might relate to that, eh?
Better get going. I'm gonna fall in love and register at Barnes & Noble, have a beautiful wedding, little tiny plastic bride and groom on top of a cake posing like this.
If you ever want to see any grandchildren, you're going to have to burn those damn boots.
Mary goes on a date with a TV camera journalist, Steve, played by now leading man Bradley Cooper in one of his early leading film roles. Mary is besotted, but her date, Steve, has a rather different reaction.
For Mary.
Mary, your date is here.
He's hot.
It was love at first sight.
Hey, Mary. I'm Steve.
He's so not gay.
For Steve.
Oh, wow. Oh, you okay?
It was not.
Yeah.
There's a hurricane off the coast of Texas.
I gotta go to work. I really wish you could be there.
It all seems rather mean and even a little predictable to this point, but Mary, undeterred by their misfire of a first meeting, decides to track and follow Steve and his journalistic team as they track down and shoot news stories in outback America. So the story now evolves into a strange road trip come stalker hybrid, and I'll promise you, you've never seen anything quite like this before.
This fall.
I'm going to go meet Steve at his next job. Now, yes, it's a storm.
She's hitting the road.
Stop, please! Moon pies! Wanna go have Steve?
And the deeper they get.
You can't stay here.
But you said...
I'm a guy. We say things we don't mean.
Well, then, how do I know you mean what you're saying now when you said you didn't mean what you said?
The harder she's trying to win him over.
We're married, the blind date my parents set me up on.
You guys belong together.
Frequently laugh out loud hilarious, I have to say that an awful lot of the comedy in this movie is borderline painful to watch. It's almost too much to bear as we endure moments of genuine awkwardness between characters. And I have to tip my hat to 20th Century Fox for having the sheer chutzpah to commit such a bizarre offbeat premise to celluloid. It certainly works narratively, though it likely won't be to everyone's taste. The strong supporting cast includes a hilarious Thomas Hayden Church. You'll recognize him as the joint lead in Alexander Payne's Oscar-winning 2004 wine country comedy, Sideways. Here in All About Steve, Hayden Church takes on a not entirely dissimilar sidekick role as the newsman in front of Steve's camera. Here's a taste of the dismally dreary homespun stories that this hapless TV news crew has to chase down and report upon.
Paula, I've just arrived at Wild Willie's old western town. Beloved tourist attraction in Tucson, Arizona. A typical day, this street would be busy. families eager to enjoy the Wild West life experience. Tragically today, the man who plays Wild Willie the Outlaw has taken his role to heart and captured eight of his co-workers, taking them hostage and holding them in the saloon a mere 85 yards away from where I stand now.
Charge him in fire, Paula! Let's go ahead now, Steve!
It's unclear at this moment who the shot was intended for, or how many lives have perhaps been lost.
You see what I mean, right? At times, the film feels a bit like a student comedy experiment, something that a bunch of teenagers shot for a giggle after smoking one too many fat doobies on a Friday night. It's delightfully eclectic and often very funny. Most delightful of all, though, is that there's a lovely, life-affirming story at the heart of this movie. Yes, there are strong character arcs and progressions, if you can believe such a thing. And if you've listened to other episodes of my show, you'll know that that's often the case with the movies I choose to discuss. So we started with the zany film Used Cars today from way back in 1980, but check out one of the wackier, more modern comedies committed to film then, in the form of the surreally bizarre studio comedy All About Steve.
About choosing your path and just committing to it.
Sometimes it takes a second chance to realize.
We're gonna take a break. Sure enough, like you to join me.
Will Steve be there?
Who do you think sent me?
The ones who never fit in.
She sees things that other people don't, and she doesn't pretend to be somebody that she's not.
Are the ones who really stand out.
Mary, he'll never change for anybody.
But he'll need to figure it out before it's too late. Sandra Bullock.
What? Did somebody fall in the mine?
All About Steve.
That brings us to the end of season two of the show. An enormous body of film work has been produced over the last 100 years or so. The variations and combinations of genre, story, and theme are almost infinite. Over the last 26 episodes, I've done my best to just scratch the surface of this vast cinematic monolith to give us a broad overview of some of the finest examples of magical cinema, both modern and classic. I hope the films have inspired you, maybe even moved you. For that, to me, is what film, and indeed all art, is. A reflection of true life, of those aspects of ourselves that we perhaps fear to explore in our subjective, oftentimes confusing, real lives. Instead, writers, directors and their teams can offer us a more objective story, told through the audiovisual mechanics of film. This, in the hope that we might glean some small gem of insight about our own selves in the process. I'd love to know what you thought of the show, the season, and indeed of season one as well. For that or any other feedback, suggestions and questions, please email us at morethanamovieqs@gmail.com. That's morethanamovieqs, all one word, @gmail.com. This More Than a Movie episode was written and presented by me, Andrew Bonello. A big thanks to our guest, Nicholas Jackman, for joining us today, and also, of course, to our illustrious sound engineer, Jordi De Bono. The intro music was Creepy Comedy, and the outro is Inspiring Teaser, both by Raphael Crux at filmmusic.io, and those clips are licensed under creativecommons.org version 4. Thank you so much for listening.